All right, so the podcast today, a lot of good stuff on it. Kind of blew my lid a couple of times.
You did. You had no self-control, which is
I mean,
it's like how you are around cookies.
Well, okay, yes, you were right, but cookies don't piss me off like the Republicans do.
No,
so
that's lack of cookies. That
pisses you off. Yeah, so great podcast brought to you by Relief Factor. If you are in pain, get out of pain. Oh, easy for you to say. Yeah, I know. I was in pain for a long time, almost, you know, I got to a place where I said to my wife, I don't think I can do this show very much longer. And she said, I know, it sucks. And I said, no.
That's what she said.
Because it's because I'm in pain. She said, yeah, whatever. Take some Relief Factor. And so I did. I didn't think it would work. It tells you, take as directed, 3 weeks. Try their 3-week quick start. It's $19.95. Take it for 3 weeks as directed. If you see no results, it's probably not going to work for you. If you see any results, keep taking it. 70% of the people that order more month after month. Why? Because they're like me. And probably a lot like me. I didn't think it would work for me. It does. ReliefFactor.com. ReliefFactor.com. Feel the difference. Here's the podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
We go to our good friend, one of the very few in Washington, Chip Roy. Hello, Chip. How are you?
Doing great, Glenn. How are you?
I'd like a plan. You know, I'd like the Republicans to have a plan. I'd like them to succeed from time to time. This vote today with Jim Jordan looks like, it looks close at least. But close, if we were playing hand grenades, would count. But we're not playing hand grenades. Tell me the situation in Washington.
Well, I see what you did there with the horseshoes and hand grenades reference. Let me just first start say, like us to have a plan. I agree with you. Glenn, look, I have a plan. A number of us have a plan in terms of what we believe we ought to be doing to constrain spending, use the appropriations process to stop what's going on here with the abuse of our liberties and a, you know, tyrannical government to secure the border. We passed a bill to do that. I mean, everybody needs to remember, so we're not always in despair. We passed the best border bill we've ever passed. That took an enormous amount of work. Now we got to do something with it. That's the whole point. We've got to stand strong, stop giving a blank check to Ukraine, all those things. We do have a plan to try to wrestle this government back from a tyrannical president. But now the question is how we're going to do it and how much we get Republicans to do the right thing. And remember, 10 years ago today, or give or take today, 10 years ago this month, we just ended the Obamacare shutdown when I was Ted Cruz's chief of staff. We were meeting in the basement of Tortilla Coast, a little rump group of 10 members of Congress and Ted Cruz. Now we have the Freedom Caucus. It's been formed. Jim Jordan helped form it. Donald Trump has come into the White House and shaken up this town. We've had an enormous change in that. Can you imagine if 10 years ago we'd have said Jim Jordan might become Speaker of the House?
No. The upside is very, very good. I'm not concerned about your plan or, you know, some that I support in Washington. I'm very concerned about those whose plan includes, hey, you know what, maybe we can get a real moderate to, you know, team up with the Democrats and then we could rule together. Oh, my gosh.
Well, so Glenn, yes, some of that rhetoric is crazy. Now, a lot of it's overstated, right? I mean, I had a conversation with one of my colleagues, I'm not going to name, who's one of the few, and he was upset because he said, people are out there saying, I'm going to go cut a deal for Hakeem Jeffries. He's like, I'm never going to do that. He's a socialist. He's crazy. So a lot of that is overstated. We'll see what happens. Mm-hmm. Our perspective is we'll go to the floor. Jim's been working it all weekend. I was working it all weekend. I was calling colleagues. We were working to figure out a plan and work through it. We'll see what happens. Right now, the numbers are somewhere between 5 and 10, I think. You never know how the dynamic plays on the floor. But once you have to cast your vote, look, I've been there. Remember? Once you have to cast your vote, there's a lot of eyes of the world on you. There's a lot of pressure. So you got to have a reason. Like, we had a reason. We wanted to change this place. Kevin, to his credit, helped us change this place, just not as fast and as far, frankly, as we needed to go. So we moved the ball forward. Now let's figure out how to get the right coach in there now to finish the job, or the right quarterback, whatever, you know, analogy you want to use.
Right.
And so we'll see what happens on the floor today. I think it's going to be somewhere around 8 to 10-ish in the first round. And then we're going to have to pull off and go talk to those individuals and try to get them over the hump. And that's just where we are right now. And we're this is all being laid bare before the world and the American people, that the battle for the soul of this country isn't just red shirt, blue shirt. It's really inside the Republican Party, where we're trying to change the Republican Party to be a party that is fighting for the hardworking American against this town. For too long, this party has been too much of this town. This is a hard effort, and we're going around the clock trying to do it. I'm actually amazed we've taken it as far as we have.
I am too.
You and I both just are watching the country burning to the ground, and we're like, guys, there's no more time. Get the extinguishers and let's get busy rebuilding. So that's where you and I are. That's where the bulk of the Republican Party is moving towards. But we got to get 200 and, you know, sufficient number, 217 plus, in order to get there.
Okay, so let me go over the list of some people that are on the fence and tell me, unless you know some names that could use some nice urging from their constituents today, who would benefit from that?
Well, let me first stipulate this and bear out for a second. I have worked with some colleagues over the last 3 days to move the needle. And I said, look, I am not going to get into the personal finger pointing game, at least until we get to the floor. Now, once you vote, then it's on you. You're going to have to own the vote. So I'm trying to be a little careful, me personally,
all right,
between now and today at noon. Because you can imagine, there's a lot of personal engagement with individuals to get them over the hump. So, but what I will tell you is there's a lot of public lists that are pretty darn accurate in terms of the, call it 5, 6, 7. I saw a list today of about 7 that are, you know, the ones that have publicly been saying that, hey, they're going to vote for Kevin McCarthy, or they're going to vote, you know, for Steve Scalise, or they're going to vote for someone else. And it is mostly wrapped around being frustrated that Kevin got deposed by just 8 individuals.
Get over it.
Plus Democrats. And some are frustrated because they thought Scalise should be next man up. And, you know, that didn't happen for a variety of reasons. And some of them are just mad at Matt Gaetz and those that pulled the motion to vacate. And I've just told them, I said, look, you got to get over that, right? That's not what this is about. What this is about is right now unifying in order to go beat Democrats. We have 1 year to the election. We've got to go fight right now to make sure that whatever we do for Israel is very focused, targeted, paid for, and is not used to go be an excuse for Ukraine. We've got to go right now make sure that we go fight to secure the border. We've got to go right now make sure that they're not going to do a blank check to Ukraine. We've got to go right now fight to hold spending in check and hold this administration accountable. There are 1,000 things for us to be focusing on, and internecine party skirmishes is not one of them. This is a tough thing. Let's get there. And let's go unite for the American people. That is my message right now between now and people voting. Now, once people vote, they got to answer for it. They got to explain why. And it ain't good enough to say, I don't like Matt Gaetz and I'm mad. You got to have a reason. What is your reason? What are you doing? Why is Jim Jordan not the guy right now to help us unite to beat Democrats? That's the question we should be asking every single member who does not vote for Jim at, you know, whatever it's going to be, noon Eastern.
Okay. I'd love to have you on like one of my social medias or something after the vote, because I'm finished at noon Eastern time.
Happy to do it. You know.
Okay, good. I'll have somebody reach out. We'll set it up if, you know, then their votes are on their own heads, and let's mobilize people.
Absolutely. And Glenn, we'll be happy to do it and talk about it. And look, everybody out there, though, I can tell you this. Call your member of Congress and make sure they're supporting Jim Jordan. Light up the phones all day today and make sure that your voices are heard.
Okay. Thank you, Chip. I appreciate it. We'll talk again soon.
God bless you.
One of the good guys. And there's lots of them. There are actually more than ever. I mean, think of this. This, if Jim Jordan gets in today, this is... everybody said the Tea Party was dead. Everybody said the, you know, constitutionalist was dead. And the Republicans have done everything to kill it. But think of this, having Jim Jordan as the Speaker of the House, what could get done? What could get done, America? This is not politics as usual. And if it becomes that, then we hold Jim Jordan's feet to the fire. But this is not politics as usual. This is a game-changing opportunity.
And I will say, what he can get done is limited, right? He's just, they just have the House. They don't have the Senate. They don't have the...
Correct.
The,
but least the House would be moving things forward.
Number one, yes. Number two, one of the things they can do are these investigations. And I don't know that there is a better person on the investigation part of this than that you would want in control than Jim Jordan.
Yes.
I mean, he is the guy who's going to be a junkyard dog going after every little bit of this. And
that means you can shut the money off for the FBI. You can shut the money off for the IRS. If you have the House, you at least have a fight. You at least have a horse in the game. You know, without that, you got nothing. And I'm sick and tired of the, you know, oh, yeah, we're going to do this as soon as we get the House, the Senate, and the White House. No. Do something with what you have. Do something. That's how you get, you know, at least in my business, if somebody has something and they're doing and they have the least amount of stuff, but all of a sudden they're doing incredible stuff, I then give them more resources to do more. What we do, we have a bunch of people that are like, yeah, I need those resources before I can do anything. That's not the way the world works now. Okay, it's not. You show me what you can do, and then I'll give you a few more resources. Then show me what you can do, and then I'll give you a few more resources. Enough of this. Call your House member today. Make sure they're voting for Jim Jordan. This is historic if it happens. Absolutely historic. And it will change everything. And Gates, you will have played Russian roulette, but neither of us got our head blown off. And the country lives to fight another day. And God bless you.
It's a great analogy. Maybe not the best party game, but hey, if you both survive, great. Maybe things are going to be better. And they would be better with Jordan,
I think. They would be.
By the way, one of the congressmen that we mentioned at the beginning of the show, it is Siskamani from New York. He is a yes on Jim Jordan. So this just happened as we were talking this hour. He was undecided.
Undecided.
He was undecided. He was one of the people that had not announced. He said he was going to announce Wednesday morning. True to his word, he did. And he has announced that he will vote for Jim Jordan.
Good.
Now, I've looked at it. Can we do a little nerd math here first?
Yeah.
Okay, so 435 people in Congress, right? Normally, there are two vacant seats. You're at 433. You have to then subtract the people that are not going to be there for whatever reason. There's one guy that I know of who's going to be at a funeral. So that's at 432. You've got also some present votes that if someone votes present, it's going to change the math a little bit.
Correct.
But still, this still means as of right now, he needs to get to 217. That number could change to 216 or 215, depending on what goes on with the present votes or who shows up today. Right now, 221 Republicans. Now, one of them is at a funeral today. So you're at 220, really.
Oh, my gosh. You can only lose three?
He can lose three. Now, he'll be back. So if they were that close, they could re-vote and he would vote on the right side. But he wouldn't get through on the first vote. But you can really only lose three or four, let's just say, is the probably the real number long term. There seems to be about seven who are saying no. Like, and I mean, you know, some of them will say, well, I'm going to meet with them today and we'll see if something changes, stuff like that. But they are saying outwardly they are a no. There are another four to six that look like they're saying they're leaning no, but they won't say anything about how they're going to vote before the vote. But some of those are gettable. Like, and I'll give you an example of this. Victoria Spartz, who we've had on the show, who's really, really good. She's very frustrated with the process and how this has worked.
I get it. So am I.
It's an understandable. Now, you know, Ms. Spartz, she's not the type that's just going to be won over. She's, you know, very, very strong on stuff. Mm-hmm. She's very principled, and she believes the principle here is a problem. What she's saying publicly, however, is if Jordan does not have the votes, she's going to vote present. Okay.
Now, why? Anyway, go ahead. We don't have time. Go ahead.
The point being, though, see, that seems to say if he does have the votes, there's a chance she's going to vote for him. What her problem is just on how they basically, you know, gone about this process. She's not against Jordan as a person. So you think in the situation where we've got a Speaker of the House, Jordan, on the line, she might come along. I mean, these are people that aren't necessarily definite no's.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program, and we really want to thank you for listening. In a small village in Poland during World War II, there was a woman, a nurse, named Irina Sendler. She had soft eyes and a calm demeanor, but she had the heart of a giant and a lion, and she risked absolutely everything. She had her priorities in the right order. If you know her story, let me tell you just a little bit more, perhaps some things you didn't know. Risking everything, this woman by herself got papers that allowed her to enter the Warsaw Ghetto. The ghetto was a prison in every single way except by name. It was just a walled-off section of the cities. They walled it off. The Nazis forced all of the Jews, the undesirables, to live behind it, out of sight and out of mind. Irina saw beyond the bricks and mortar. To her, these people, the children, were never out of sight or mind. How many of us today say, I don't have time? I don't want to get involved. That was the case back then. But the consequences were much higher than they are now. If people had just done little risky things, you know, paid more attention to what was really going on and stood against little things, perhaps Irina wouldn't have had to do this. But she acquired the forged papers, and they allowed her to enter the ghetto not to inspect sanitary conditions, as her badge claimed. Her job was to smuggle out children. It was a daily, daring operation of hope. Every time she entered, she walked on the razor's edge, her heart raced, knowing the weight of her secret could be her undoing. And every time she entered, that was harrowing enough, but it was her exit every day that was the real danger. Every day she'd go into the ghetto and she'd find a way to smuggle a child or two out. She would smuggle them out in a toolbox, in a bag, sometimes beneath a tram or an ambulance. She carefully selected a network, and she managed to save 2,500 children from certain death, one child at a time. Imagine. But as she walked out of the ghetto, each time she was carrying a child, she carried more with her. Each time she left the ghetto, her pockets were full of tiny little mementos of the desperate parents. A photo, or a locket, or a scribbled note. The final messages to the world, placed in the trusting hands of a stranger. She kept all of those hidden in a place she only knew about. The Gestapo eventually caught wind of her deeds. There was rumors of an angel that was helping, and they were too loud to be ignored. You see, evil has its plans, and it will go after every angel, because every angel disrupts its chaos, its evil, and its mission, in this case, to liquidate every Jew on earth. They found the angel. The Gestapo captured and tortured her. They needed her to talk. They needed her secrets. How? Who? Why? They broke her legs. They broke her feet. Even under intense pain, she never revealed the identities of the children she saved or any of the collaborators. She never revealed any of the secrets she held personally. Oh, had they only known just that one secret, how different things might have been. Her friends, believe it or not, managed to bribe her way out of her execution. They get her out. They heal. Broken legs, broken feet. They get her off the gallows. Only to see her then, after she's been healed, to continue her work under a different name. We can't relate to it here like they can over in Europe. Communities never really healed. We're much more like children in America. We're much more trusting of our neighbors and our government because we've never had it really turn on us before. We've never, until recently, had neighbors actually spy on one another and turn each other in. It wasn't until COVID. Those scars are left on Europe. They were left on Irina, physical and deep within her soul. Post-war Poland tried to move on, but now the communists were in. And the memories lingered like an unending winter. Irina was celebrated by many, but she kept her most profound secret locked away. It wasn't until later when a tattered old diary surfaced. Its pages were yellowed with time. It wasn't her diary. It actually belonged to a child that she had kept hidden as she rescued others and hid others. The pages were filled with sketches of the tiny attic hideout. It's full of nightmares and dreams of freedoms. You can almost hear in reading it the hushed lullabies sung in the dark, feel the cold gusts through the attic floorboards, and the sense of the unspoken understanding between the two lives in this diary, intertwined in a web of secrets and sacrifices and unsung heroics. The world really knows of one girl's little diary. Maybe we've forgotten about the other girl's diary, or perhaps we were never taught about this little girl. The stories she told on those pages of her diary didn't happen in Amsterdam. They happened in Warsaw. The diary just chronicled the harrowing tales of a little girl watching her mother leave night after night, not knowing if mom would ever return. It's the tale of a young girl watching her mother disappear nightly. Her mom was Irina Sendler, the nurse. Unbeknownst to anyone else, these two shared their peril, their most guarded secret. In her bid to save thousands, Irina was also racing against time to save her own daughter from the jaws of death. Nobody knew, but Irina herself was Jewish, and she was hiding in plain sight. All of those years, she wasn't just saving the children of others. She also knew the importance of keeping her own heritage, her own daughter, and at that time, the importance of keeping it secret. In the pages of that diary are all the trinkets and the photos and the lockets of hair, the silent promises from parents to children, each item a desperate plea, remember me. Today, strangely, once again, the world stands on the threshold of insanity. And we can still see the truth. It's just right behind us. And we teeter on the edge. Are we going to step across this threshold, or are we going to turn around and close this door? Will we actually listen to those cries, those pleas that have been silenced for so long? Remember me. Most people don't even remember her name. Most people are long forgotten, and we memorize the names of great generals and battles and dates, but we really don't know their story. Her story is not really, her name is not really important. Her story is what matters. Her story is what will inspire others. There's no big statue of Irina. There's just a simple tree now planted in her honor in Jerusalem that bears the testament to a life dedicated to standing up and just doing the next right thing. Never again is now.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
All right. Father Calvin Robinson, an Anglican deacon, is here to answer what the heck happened to Great Britain.
Oh, my goodness. I wish I knew. In fact, I do know.
How are you?
Very well. How are you?
Good. Welcome.
Thank you for having me on.
You bet. Welcome. I'm glad you're here.
It's a mess.
So, GB News, explain for anybody that doesn't know what GB News, Great Britain News,
yep.
And it is an independent voice.
The premise of GB News was it was supposed to provide some kind of alternative perspective in England. So we've got Sky News, we've got the BBC, we've got a number of state broadcasters, Channel 4, and they all sing from the same hymn sheet. It's a metropolitan liberal elite bubble.
Mm-hmm.
It's our Westminster bubble. Mm-hmm. Our press and our politicians all live in the same area and talk the same talk. But the vast majority of the country do not think like that.
Correct.
And there's a silent majority that felt left behind.
And so GB News was started how long ago?
Almost 2 years now.
Two years.
Just coming up to 2 years, yeah.
And you guys do great work. Really great work.
Thank you.
And what happened?
They've gone mainstream, unfortunately. This is the problem. If you try to offer an alternative perspective in England, you'll get clamped down upon. So everyone was after us. You know, the left, the liberals were after us because we were coming from a lot of us were coming from a centre-right perspective, even though we have to show balance in the UK. So every single conversation we have to have someone from the left and someone from the right.
Oh, is that why it's so obnoxious?
So I could say, I believe this, but other people believe that. You can never just say, this is my opinion, this is what I think. Because our broadcast regulator, Ofcom, clamped down heavily on due impartiality and balance. So we had that angle. We had the advertisers pulling out. If ever we mentioned anything, you know, the sanctity of life, for example, the sanctity of marriage being between one man and one woman, anything as controversial and outrageous as that, the advertisers would pull out. So on the one hand, we're trying to have balance in what we say. On the other hand, we've got to kind of feed the crocodile and make sure that the advertisers pay us. And then there's woke mob. And the woke mob has been gunning for us since day one. And the woke mob isn't just the lefty liberals. It's also the other broadcasters. You know, people on the BBC and Sky were saying, close the whole thing down. We don't want any competition.
It is crazy. It's unbelievable how many people are afraid of other people's opinions.
Right. Well, they don't want a free press either, which is astounding to me. A broadcaster should experience a breadth of diversity of thought and opinion. It should be a good thing.
Right.
But they're like, no, close those down. They're not part of, they call it the broadcast ecology.
Oh, God. So you were fired at GB.
Yeah. The brief synopsis of that story is that my friend Lawrence Fox said on air something inappropriate about a woman because she's a misandrist, she's a man-hating fourth-wave feminist, and he was saying, who'd want to have a relationship with someone like that, someone who clearly hates men? But
wait, that was it?
I don't know if I can use the word he said on air.
Okay, no, probably you have different standards.
So I'm talking around it. But he used an inappropriate word against her, but it's a word that she's used many times against men. And he was trying to say, this is a broader conversation here, because the conversation was about men's mental health. The biggest killer in men under the age of 50 in the UK is suicide. Like, we have a serious men's mental health problem.
And we were talking about this yesterday. if this kind of suicide, if this was anything else,
yep.
it would be called an epidemic.
Yep.
And all of these resources would be unleashed to stop this, figure out what's going on.
But Glenn, men are at the bottom of the intersectionality ladder, especially white men, all the way at the bottom. So there's no help provided.
So wait a minute. Your friend was the one who said this.
Right. So she had a conversation first. This female commentator had a conversation with someone who was saying we need a men's minister. So in our country, we have a women's minister in our parliament that looks after women's issues. Mm-hmm. He was saying we need a men's minister too, because men have particular issues and concerns that need addressing. Either we don't have either, or we have both. Mm-hmm. As she said, no, we don't need a men's minister. Men are the problem, men are the oppressors. Women have mental health issues too. It's all whataboutery. And essentially, my friend Lawrence Fox was asked to comment on this situation. And he said, look, people like her are the problem. Men hating fourth wave feminists, who'd want to be with a person like that? Used an inappropriate word, one that wasn't illegal, but I would say is probably immoral. Mm. Should have been chastised for it, should have been reprimanded for it. But he was suspended, and the host of the show that he was on was also suspended for not providing enough challenge. And I said, we cannot call ourselves the home of free speech and then cancel someone for saying something that we find offensive. And then I got suspended.
Oh, that's good.
It's shocking.
Yeah, it's good. I've read some stuff that you have talked about, and I've got a lot to talk to you about. But one of them is, I was just over in London, and it's just dead inside, you know? It is also not Great Britain that it used to be. If you look at the Palestinian...
London is a separate country at this point.
It is.
I can walk around London for half an hour and not hear a single English accent, or possibly even the English language.
Yeah,
The demographics, English people are in a minority in our capital city.
And that is a little frightening because of what's happening this week with the Palestinians.
Yeah.
It's happening here in the United States as well. I have no problem if you're for the Palestinians, but not if you are for the killing of innocents, and not through war, but planned executions of walking into people's houses and just killing the whole family.
Hamas is a proscribed terrorist organization in our country. And we have people out on the streets waving the Palestinian flag, supporting Hamas for what they're doing, for the kidnapping, the rape and murder of civilians and babies, for goodness sake, because they hate the Jews so much. And this is the dividing line in our country. It is the Muslims versus the Jews. It's those who support Israel versus those who support the Mohammedans, unfortunately. You know, out here, you seem to have a different picture. Abortion seems to be the line where you can determine if someone's on the right or left of politics. Mm-hmm. In our country, it's where do you stand with the Mohammedans versus the Jews?
So is it about Israel or is it about, because I think it's not enough to be for Israel. You have to be for the right of the Jewish people to live. Mm-hmm. And that seems to separate people throughout history. You know, people will be, oh, no, I'm for Israel. I'm for Israel. But they're not necessarily for the Jews' right to live.
Right. Well, this is the problem. I mean, if you look at the entire area of the Middle East, Israel is surrounded by hostile states. It's Islamic states all the way around. And all they want to do is live in peace in the center of that hellhole.
Right.
And of course, they have to defend themselves. And the moment they do, people say, oh, you're oppressing us and you're persecuting us. But I'm not saying there isn't nuance in this conversation. There's plenty of nuance to be heard. On my show, I've talked about the persecution of Christians in Israel recently, mm-hmm. and that is ramping up by both sides, by the Arabs and the Jews. Mm-hmm. So that needs to be addressed, but does not stop the Jewish people having a right to live.
Do you have a problem? Because, I mean, Israel, I know the chief rabbi of the holy places, and his job is to oversee Muslim, Jewish, Christian holy places and make sure that they are all protected.
Good.
Okay, that's his job. Yeah. However, I don't have a problem with the Jewish people having a Jewish state. Yeah. Now, it's not, but I don't have a problem with that. Do you? I mean, if that's what they want to do, they can do that. Now, when they start executing people like Saudi Arabia or Iran, then I have a problem with it. But if you're saying, look, this is a home for Jews,
yeah.
I don't have a problem.
Well, that is the only Jewish state. We have plenty of Christian states, correct, plenty of Islamic states. That's the only Jewish state there is.
Right.
And I think it's important to have a state religion because it sets out the values for that country. It says, this is what we believe as a people. This is who we are. And it's the foundation of your culture. You have to have a set of values and principles that people subscribe to.
So our founders thought the exact opposite.
No, that's not true, is
it? No. A state religion.
Yeah.
We are a Judeo-Christian country, but we don't have a state religion.
Let's go back to before you were a country, though. Every single state that was set up in the United States was founded on a Christian setting. The constitutions were explicitly Christian, whether it was Presbyterian, Pentecostal, Anglican, Catholic, all of the states were Christian. The problem was when they came together and when they stopped being these United States and became the United States.
No. The problem came. Our founders were deeply, they knew that this country will fail if we ever lose our underpinnings of God.
Yes.
What they didn't want was, no offense, the Anglican Church. They didn't want church that was ruling everything.
I agree, but it became implicit in your Constitution of the United States. God is implicit in the Christian. The Christian God is implicit. If it's not explicit, it's not protected. That's the problem. And if we look all around the world, in Christian countries, everyone's right to freedom of worship is protected. But in countries that aren't Christian, you don't have that same freedom.
Correct. So I saw in one of the articles you wrote, you guys are in more trouble than we are, and we're in a lot of trouble. The number of abortions is about 200,000 per year, right? The number of marriages in Great Britain, also about 200,000 a year.
Yeah.
Abortions going up, marriage going down.
Yeah.
That doesn't sound good.
No, we're killing the family, quite literally. We're killing ourselves off. The birth rate in the UK is down to 1.4. It might be even less than that now. So we're not even replacing ourselves. A mother and father aren't having two children. And we are being outbred by people that do not like our culture and do not like our religion and do not like necessarily our state. So it's not a good place that we're in. We need to encourage families. We need to encourage marriage. We need to encourage fathers in particular. Fatherlessness is at a massive all-time high in our country. And we see the statistics show us that if a family breaks down before a child reaches the age of 18, they're twice as likely to end up homeless, twice as likely to end up failing school, and twice as likely to end up in prison or some kind of crime. It benefits society to have two parents.
Father Calvin Robinson, he's an Anglican deacon. And we're just talking about the state of the Western world. This is happening, and we are, we're committing suicide.
Yeah.
We're committing suicide, and nobody seems to care, and the churches are completely silent.
Yeah.
What do we do?
If they're not silent, they're worse than that. They're complicit.
Yes, right.
This is the problem. In the Church of England at the moment, there's a conversation being had about how they can implement same-sex blessings. So essentially, approve of gay marriage.
That's the same thing the Pope is doing now with his synod. He's like same-sex marriage blessings. Yes. Not the same, but it is.
No, we're blessing the people, not the union. We're blessing, it's legalistic nonsense. It's pharisaical is what it is. And you can't ask God to bless what he has called abhorrent.
So what do we do to fight this?
Well, I think it has to be from the ground up. It has to be the laity. It has to be the faithful masses have to say, no, this is not okay, because the leaders are captured. The liberals have taken over the Western church. And we see that everywhere, from America to Canada to Australia, everywhere. New Zealand and England.
Everywhere.
However, so I was in Rwanda in Africa earlier this year, and there's so many faithful Anglicans out there. I went to the GAFCON meeting. So the primates from 85% of the world's representatives of Anglicans were there, and they were orthodox in their faith. And it reminded me that in America and England, we spread the gospel around the world. You know, in England, British Empire spread it to the colonies, and America likewise.
Mm-hmm.
And now it's time to get those people to return the gospel to us, because we have lost it.
China is the same way. The people in Iraq and Syria, the Christians that were there, their faith is unlike anything I've ever witnessed in America.
Well, maybe it's because they are so persecuted out there. And we're getting to a point where we might be persecuted for being Christians in the West. So maybe that will strengthen the church.
How do we strengthen, if you're going to a church right now and you have kind of a wishy-washy, how do you strengthen? for people who want to stay in their church, but they would like to get it back on track.
Yeah, it's difficult. I struggle with this. I landed in America a few days ago, and I was looking for a church to go to on Sunday. I was looking around. All the Episcopal churches here had female priests, so obviously I couldn't go to one of them. There was all kinds of wacky stuff. There was 100% Jesus church, which I don't know what that means, as if all the other churches don't have 100% Jesus, maybe 80%.
I went to a church I swear to you, with a cross on the steeple, it said, the pastor said, now, you all know that I don't believe in God, but, and I was like,
what?
How is that even possible? So 100% Jesus, that's a step up.
Oh, this universalism is taking over.
I know.
But there were so many churches, is my point, but it was so difficult to find a good, solid church with sound teaching. That's the problem. So I don't know what the faithful do. If they walk away and say, we're not going to stay here because you're not teaching the Bible, maybe that will leave the corrupt organizations to continue what they're doing. So maybe that's not the best approach. Maybe stay and fight from within, but then you're not receiving sound teaching. I don't know what the answer is.
You optimistic or pessimistic for the West?
I have hope, because it doesn't matter what happens to the West. This might be the end of the Western civilization as we know it. You know, empires have risen and fallen throughout human history. We have taken for granted that what we have now will always be, but it doesn't need to be. As long as we maintain our faith, that's what's important. The kingdom to come is what's important. What we are experiencing now, it doesn't really matter. So maybe the West will crumble. We can't cling on to it too tightly. We have to help it as much as we can. We have to advance the kingdom, but we can't make an idol of Western civilization.
Yeah, we can't lose our first citizenship to save our second.
Absolutely. That's a good way of putting it.
And there are many examples of that. Mm. And it's amazing to me how many Christians who claim to believe in a biblical God, but see the saving of the West as too big of a miracle. We've got to do it.
Yeah.
And it's like, I mean, raising people from the dead, that's a little harder than, you know.
Well, I mean, it goes two ways, doesn't it? We have to pray, but we also have to enact things. Yeah, God works through us.
Yeah. It's weird. We are self-hating egomaniacs so much of the time. We either deny the power of God and think we're all powerful, or we deny any power or any ability to do anything about and put it all on God, where it's kind of a little mixture of both.
It is.
Yeah.
There's a massive problem of us trying to make gods of ourselves at the moment.
So you're going back to England. What are you doing?
Well, I'm just going back to my church. So I've always been bivocational. So I've got a parish church that I'm responsible for, and I also had the media stuff. I don't have the media stuff anymore. So I don't know what I'm going to be doing next.
Well, maybe we can help you. There's another GB News here, kind of called Blaze.
You believe in freedom? You believe in Christ?
Yes, we do. Thank you so much, Father. Appreciate it.
Not at all.
God bless. Father Calvin Robinson, Anglican deacon. You can find him at calvinrobinson.com. CalvinRobinson.com.
Hi, it's Jason Whitlock. Have you secured your spot for Roll Call 2.0, my annual men's summit in Nashville, Tennessee? Are you looking for an opportunity to fellowship with other believers, to come together across the identity lines the left have drawn to divide us? Join me, country music star John Rich, and Blaze founder Glenn Beck in Nashville on Saturday, June 1st, for Roll Call 2.0. We're going to listen to great music, eat fantastic barbecue, and hear inspiring speeches from myself, Glenn Beck, North Carolina Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, Pastor E.W. Jackson, and many more. Let's quit letting the satanic left sift us like wheat. Let's come together as men and talk about the sacrifices we must make to restore the unity and shared values that made our country the envy of the world. Visit FearlessArmyRollCall.com to secure your spot.